Blaze Radio Network.
And now, Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher.
A lot of people looking for gigs these days, and if you are one of them, you could work at the Antarctic Post Office. It's Antarctica Post Office. If you're good at sorting mail, selling postage stamps, counting penguins, this job could be you. It's the post office at Port Lockroy, also known as the Penguin Post Office. It's a popular tourist destination, and it's just off the west side of the Antarctic Peninsula. It gets about 18,000 visitors each season. Okay, if you say so. The it's Base A, Post Lockroy's Base A, home to the post office. It was established in 1944. It's now managed by the UK Antarctic Heritage Trust. It operates the museum, the gift shop. Profit from the shop supports renovations of other historic sites in Antarctica. If you look at their application pack, it's operated just for a few months a year, and accommodation and facilities are simple and minimal. There's no doctor stationed at Port Lockroy, and the nearest hospital is in Argentina. They stock a good supply of emergency equipment, antibiotics, painkillers, and our staff are given first aid training. We can also seek advice from the doctors who work on the ships. Yeah, you think you can help us out? I don't know, not today. However, in a medical emergency, it could take up to about 7 days to evacuate you. So you might want to consider carefully your fitness for the role. Physical and mental ability to do the job. Physical attributes to live in the polar environment. Physical ability to help rescue others. Short notice personnel medical supplies will not be available. Yeah, no kidding. So anyway, if you're looking for the gig, it's there, and you can apply at the Antarctic Trust website and take a look at their application pack for Port Lockroy base leader. Looks like you're going to be making about $1,800 a month. So if that's worth it, then you're not going to see anybody and live in the cold for, I don't know, 4, 5, maybe 6 months for $1,800 a month. If it's worth it to you, good luck. God bless. Welcome. Welcome to Chewing the Fat. Did you know that 60% of U.S. pork production comes from one company, and that's owned by the Chinese? And their hogs are giving something called
ractopamine. Ractopamine.
Yeah, and that is not good. It's banned in 160 countries, including China. Yet, you find it in your grocery store aisle every day. There's a better way. Moink. Moinkbox.com/Jeffy, to be exact. I like knowing exactly where my meat comes from. You can quote me on that. And with Moink, that place is from small family farms all across the country. And you can help save the family farm and get access to the highest quality meat on earth when you join the Moink movement today. That's moo plus oink, which equals Moink. Moink delivers grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and sustainable wild-caught Alaskan salmon straight to your door. I am a big fan of the Alaskan salmon and the bacon, to be exact. Moink farmers farm like our grandparents did, and as a result, Moink tastes like it should because the family farm does it better. The Moink difference is a difference you can taste, and you can feel good knowing you're helping family farms stay financially independent as well. You choose the meat delivered in every box, like ribeyes or chicken breasts or pork chops or salmon fillets and much, much more. Plus, you can cancel anytime. And by the way, when I say much, much more, I mean things like, oh, yeah. I mean, I know you're hearing it, but you can smell it as well. Moink bacon. It is so good. I mean, even Shark Tank host Kevin O'Leary called Moink's bacon the best bacon he's ever tasted. I agree. And the Ring doorbell founder, Jamie Siminoff, jumped at the chance to invest in Moink. And there's nothing like getting the delivery from Moink Meat, and you have that Moink box delivered to your front door, and you open it up, and you're able to go through the ribeyes and the chicken breasts and the bacon. You know it's going to be a good, good day. Plus, they guarantee you're going to say, oink, oink, I'm just so happy I got moinked. And believe me, when you're listening and smelling... Oh, yeah, that bacon, you will say, oink, oink, I'm just so happy I got moinked. I know I do, and you will too. Keep American farming going by signing up at moinkbox.com/Jeffy right now. Listeners to this show, Chewing the Fat, get free filet mignon in every order for a year. That's 1 year of the best filet mignon you'll ever taste, but it's for a limited time. So go to moinkbox.com/Jeffy right now. moinkbox.com/Jeffy. moinkbox.com/Jeffy. You know, we've talked about how bad the methamphetamine problem is here in the United States of America before. I mean, worldwide, but globally, 50% of the seizures globally are just here in the United States of America for meth. And we had another big bust just a few days ago at the World Trade Bridge in Laredo, Texas. Almost a ton of methamphetamine in a shipment of strawberry puree. That is not good. They discovered 100, well, I mean, it is good. We caught it. The 158 packages containing a total of nearly 1,761 pounds of alleged methamphetamine concealed within the shipment. Street value, $35.2 million. Wow. I mean, that underscores the threat that they face at the ports trying to catch everything that's coming into the country. I would guess that street value of $35 million puts a little bit of a dent in the shipments coming across into the country. They used what they called part of their secondary examination. I guess they referred to the search as just another examination, but they used a non-intrusive inspection, this NII equipment. And then that's how they discovered the 158 packages. So we're getting better at discovering how it's being shipped into the country. I mean, holy cow. And, you know, then you think, well, you know, it's one shipment. Yeah, but we had a story this weekend where a trainer and a racehorse both test positive for meth. So the trainer is doing meth. And you know what? What the hell? Let's give it to the horse, too. So the trainer has got a 3-year disqualification from racing, thanks to the Racing Integrity Board. But if she stays off the drug for 18 months, she might be allowed to saddle up again, which is going to be a difficult test. Once you're addicted to something, of course, it's, you know, tough to get off of it. But meth has proven to be quite an addiction to overcome. I hope she does. And I don't know what they're going to do to the horse. I don't know. Does the horse go through withdrawals or does it just start freaking out where they're going to have to put it down? I don't know. It just, so she misled the investigator about the extent of her drug use. Well, yeah, no kidding. I mean, if you're using a drug and you're addicted to it, you're going to first deny. So that's, you know, considered misleading. I get it. And plus, you know, the drug seems to make people stupid. We had the guy in West Virginia that, when pulled over by the police, confused his meth for his registration during a traffic stop. Officers said, yeah, I need to see your license and registration. And I reached into the glove box and, a bag containing, crystal meth, fell out. So that's when they brought in the dog and searched the vehicle. And he had about 4 grams of meth in the car. Porter was carrying approximately 4 grams of meth, while the passenger had almost 220 grams of meth. Now, does the driver know what the passenger has? Oh, you make the case that the driver doesn't know what the passenger has, but at least the meth that was in the glove box, maybe the passenger put it there, officer. I don't know how it got there. But it definitely proves that meth is a huge problem in this country. And I don't know what we can do to stop it, but big busts at the border certainly help. No question about that. And, you know, I guess we just go from there. Anyway, and you talk about good things that are happening with marijuana. So is it a gateway drug to meth? I don't know. You tell me. I mean, good news for Michigan. I know the economy is, going crazy and people are looking for gigs and trying to become part of the Penguin Postal Service down at Antarctica. But 420, the holiday, we're getting reports now that they had record sales, 2.3 tons of marijuana sold in Michigan surrounding the 420 holiday. That's good news, right? Right? I mean, somewhere that's good news for the economy. I mean, it keeps going up. They say that reports show that in 2020, they sold 430 pounds on 420. In 2021, they sold 1,912 pounds on 420. And in 2022, they sold 4,619 pounds. They said they don't usually keep data except for on 420, but it's reasonable to assume that the sales on 421 were up as well. But that's good news for the economy in Michigan, I think. All right, let's go to the break room. I need something cold to drink desperately. Oh. So it's looking like Elon's deal with Twitter is going to go through. I didn't think it would, but they're saying now that Twitter may announce that the $54.20 per share deal is going to go through. And they may announce that today. For those of you listening live or not live, it is 4/25, 2022, April 25th. And so they're saying, I thought we were going to have to wait at least until Thursday. They were saying that they had another board meeting on Thursday, but the heat is on Twitter and the shareholders. And they're like, take the money and run. Let Elon have it. So we'll see. Of course, you know, with anything, the deal could collapse. I mean, Elon might tell one of the board members to take a hike and then the whole thing falls through. But we'll see. It's looking like a big possibility that Elon will own Twitter at the end of the day. And what does that mean for non-shareholders? Well, you can follow me on Twitter at JeffyJFR. And anyone who claims I'm going to leave Twitter if Elon buys Twitter, bye. Take care. Go build your own Twitter. That's what we were all told. Oh, you don't like what Twitter's doing? Build your own Twitter. You know, and Elon's not going to be the end all, save all of Twitter. Well, I mean, he's going to do some stuff that, you know, we don't like, and some things are going to continue on. I mean, Twitter has done some amazing things up to this date, right? I mean, he has a ban on climate change ads. So they say they're no longer going to allow advertisers on the site who deny the scientific consensus on climate change, echoing the policy already in place at Google. Does he change that if he owns Twitter? Maybe. I mean, he believes in climate change too. So that might be something he leaves. And he may, you know, although he says he's for free speech and he wants people to, you know, say what they think and say what they mean, we'll see. We'll see if things like that change, because holy cow, if you're talking about, you know, misleading claims about climate change, many people could make the argument that your claims are misleading. But I don't want you to deny the scientific consensus, because I'm pretty sure technically there isn't a scientific consensus, but I could be wrong. And we have the people all wound up that he might let Donald Trump back on the platform. I saw a tweet from the great Rob Reiner. You know him, you love him. Now that Elon Musk is buying Twitter, the question for all of us is, will he allow a criminal who used this platform to lie and spread disinformation to try to overthrow the U.S. government to return and continue his criminal activity? And if he does, how do we combat it? I don't know, Rob. How do you combat it? Ugh. It's just agonizing. It's just amazing to me that without censorship, they can't survive. I mean, we want free speech, but we needs to be censored. That's not free speech. Just saying. And, you know, speaking of Twitter, the former CEO, Jack Dorsey, who is still on the board, by the way, and it seemed like he was for this deal, as a matter of fact. Looks like he needs a little money. Anyway, he is no longer, he was a CEO and president and chairperson of Block. And so he changed his title now to Blockhead and chairperson, effective immediately. According to this, there's no change in Mr. Dorsey's roles and responsibilities. He's just, his title is now Blockhead and chairperson. So he co-founded the payments business Square in 2009, and it was renamed Block in December to reflect its growth, because they took over the Tidal music streaming service and Cash App and this TBD 5456695, which is a financial services platform primarily focused on Bitcoin. So he is the head of that, and he's still on the board of Twitter, right as it stands right now, until Elon makes it private or doesn't make it private. He's on the board until May. But he's now, you know, remember Elon added he is a technoking of Tesla. And so now Jack answering that with becoming a blockhead. Some would say that's a pretty good name for Jack. Speaking of blockheads, the Dingleberry who got into a fight with Mike Tyson on the airplane apparently has an attorney now. He has a guy from Morgan & Morgan, which is a big-time Florida attorney. I don't even know if it's the Matt Morgan is this guy's attorney, Melvin Townsend III. But it's Melvin Townsend III. Okay, whatever. But he says Matt Morgan from Morgan & Morgan is his attorney. Morgan & Morgan, I thought, was a husband and wife team, but I think they got divorced. But that's just a side note. That's a big law firm out of Florida, and they take on some big cases. So they are his attorney. And this guy has quite a record, it's looking like. He's a lengthy criminal record, which, you know, obviously, that's misleading, and we can't, that doesn't mean that he deserved to get punched for Mike Tyson. And so they claim that the water bottle was did not happen. He denies throwing the water bottle. He said that he didn't press charges at the airport or want to continue with the investigation because he was still in shock. I just didn't know what the next steps were going to be, and so I have physical injuries, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. But now I know what I want to do, because Matt Morgan from Morgan & Morgan has, you know, helped me out with clearing my mental thoughts on, you know what, I could make some cash from Mike. Yeah, okay. Now, you know, could Mike have exercised greater restraint before using his hands on an overly excited fan? Yeah, I guess. But you know what? If he told the guy, back off me, and the guy was a, you know, agonizing nightmare of an overly excited fan, that's a problem. And if something agitated Mike to where he felt like he needed to punch you in the face, you know, so be it, punk. But I'm sure they're going to settle. The original thing we talked about was that it was going to, you know, Mike will have to pay him some money because he's Mike Tyson. He's a former heavyweight champ. He's, you know, Mr. Superstar. And he's, you know, his hands are a deadly weapon. So he should not have done it. All right, you know, here's some money, go away. I'm sure that's what Matt Morgan from Morgan & Morgan is hoping happens for his client, Melvin Townsend III. I did see, and I don't know that we talked about it, but I saw where Mike, after he left the plane in San Francisco, he was on his way to Miami on that JetBlue flight. Then he hitched a ride with UFC president Dana White. And Dana was flying him on his private plane, and they made the joke about how you don't fight Mike Tyson on the seat on his social media accounts. It's pretty funny. And Tyson was, of course, on his way to Miami to serve as the a main speaker at the Bazinga Cannabis Conference. I'm sure he was there to promote his own Tyson 2.0 Bud Line. So, I mean, it was a tight schedule. He had to get to Miami. You wouldn't want to miss the Bazinga Cannabis Conference. Okay, so who died today? Well, first, before I get to the list, there's a list, actually, today of people of who died today on the list. I want to apologize. I want to apologize to CNN Plus. All right, I believe I said on either last week, Thursday or Friday, that they had, I put them in the who died today category. And I just checked into the app. I went to CNN Plus. They're still meeting. So they're still there. They're still alive. I don't know why. I thought they were dead. So I apologize. I'll keep checking back, making sure that the heart monitor is still beating, because I don't want to falsely report that they're dead before they are actually dead or come back to life. Orrin Hatch, the longtime Republican senator from Utah, passed away this weekend. He was 88 years of age, according to the Orrin G. Hatch Foundation. He retired a couple years ago. He served in the Senate for 42 years. He was the longest serving Republican senator. And so no cause of death was released. Maybe we'll find out. But according to the executive director of the Hatch Foundation, Orrin G. Hatch personified the American dream. And he really did. He started out with nothing and what he called a ramshackle house during the Great Depression, and then became a senator and the longest serving senator. And he graduated from BYU in 1959, went to the University of Pittsburgh with a law degree in 1962, and moved to Utah in 1969. I mean, he was born in Pennsylvania. So, I mean, going back to the University of Pittsburgh after BYU was not out of the ordinary. And according to the governor of the great state of Utah, Spencer Cox, his legacy in public service truly made a difference in our state and our nation. He was a former bishop of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and his first public office he ran he won in 1976. So Orrin Hatch, dead at the age of 88 years of age. You know who else died last week? And I didn't see it until this weekend. I was really kind of bummed. And he really is, I mean, very few people are probably going to remember him, but he was nicknamed the Mad Bomber, and he played NFL football. And I still have his football card, Daryl LaMonica. I know. Daryl LaMonica passed away. Very sad. He was 80 years old. I mean, I hopefully his card will be worth something now. Oh no, I didn't mean that. That was just a bad joke. So he ended up getting drafted. He played football at Notre Dame. He went to high school at Clovis High School in California, played at Notre Dame. He was drafted by the Bills in the 24th round. So that's a long way down the list. But in the 1963 AFL draft, he spent 4 years at Buffalo, really kind of riding the bench. Nobody knew he was there. Then he went to the Raiders, the Oakland Raiders in 1967. And then in 69, I mean, he was on fire. That's when he became Daryl LaMonica, the Mad Bomber. So, I mean, he won, he took the Raiders to 4 straight Western Division titles, 1 AFL championship, 2-time AFL MVP, and 3-time All-Star, which, you know, obviously I don't have any more technically All-Stars, you know, all pros. But just incredible that his high school named the stadium after him. Back in, 1974, a long time ago. But Daryl LaMonica, rest in peace. Very sad to hear. There's a guy that you wouldn't know if you saw him, right? I mean, if you passed him in aisle number 4 of Walmart, you wouldn't go, I think that's Daryl LaMonica. But if you heard his name, you'd have to talk Daryl LaMonica, the Daryl LaMonica. I mean, he's the guy, right? You would know. You would. You wouldn't? I would. I also see where Cynthia Plaster Caster passed away at 74 years of age. And you say to yourself, Cynthia Plaster Caster? Who the heck is her? Well, she was a huge music fan who became famous in the 60s and 70s for her plaster casts of rock stars' erect man part. She died of a long illness. She was 74 years of age. She was a Chicago South Side plaster caster. So awesome. She did plaster. That's casts of all the rock stars and their man parts, as big as their man parts could be. So very sad. In fact, her one exhibition that she has holding one cast mold of someone's man part, it doesn't look like it. Some would say that it could be a larger cast, but I guess not. Not that particular one. You're still happy to be a part of it. So rest in peace, Cynthia Plaster Caster, dead at 74 years of age. Now, one lady who is not dead yet, she is 96 years of age, and Natasia Guleja, G-U-L-E-J, from Ukraine, has just fled to Germany from Ukraine after Russia invaded her country. She is a Holocaust survivor from Ukraine who was in Auschwitz with Anne Frank and has said during, after surviving Stalin and Hitler, she said, I'll survive Putin too. Take that. She spoke at an event marking the 77th anniversary of the liberation by British and Canadian troops at the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, which she was, moved to after she went to Auschwitz. She talked about the genocide against the Ukrainians and compared the Russians to the Nazis, saying, I have no words for what the Hitler admirers from the Kremlin did in Bucha and Mariupol. Amazing. I feel like she was the voice of the lady. Remember the HBO Max show? It was HBO Max, right? It wasn't Showtime. Chernobyl. Yeah, it was HBO series. And I don't think it was HBO Max then, but Chernobyl. And one of the episodes, In fact, I believe it was episode 4, where they come for the old lady who was milking her cow on the farm because they're evacuating everybody from Chernobyl, and she is just in her barn milking her cows, and her question to the young soldier, you know, she talks about how she'd been there through them all, and she was still alive.
It's time to go. Did you hear me? This is an evacuation, you understand?
Yeah, I don't care.
You have to come with me.
Why?
Because they told me, so now I'm telling you. Everyone in this village, everyone. It's not safe here. There's radiation in the air. What's wrong with you?
You know how old I am.
She's milking her cow.
Old.
I'm 82.
82.
I've lived here my whole life. Right here, that house, this place. What do I care about safe?
Right.
I have a job. Don't cause trouble.
Trouble? You're not the first soldier to stand here with a gun. When I was 12, the revolution came. Tsar's men, then Bolsheviks. Boys like you marching in lines. They told us to leave. No. Then there was Stalin and his famine. The Holodomor. My parents died. Two of my sisters died.
Wow.
They told the rest of us to leave. No. And the Great War. German boys, Russian boys. More soldiers, more famine, more bodies. My brothers never came home. But I stayed, and I'm still here. After all that I have seen. So I should leave now, because of something I cannot see at all. No.
Yeah, and then, I mean, the young soldier is not having any of it. So he throws her milk out, and then he shoots the cow, which is just amazing. And then that was the end of that. I don't know, you know, I guess we have to assume that the old lady went with him, or that he ended up killing the old lady, which, you know, is definitely a possibility. But that's who this lady is. That's who this lady is, man. I survived Hitler. I survived Stalin. I'll survive Vladimir Putin as well. So the pandemic is definitely over because executions are now back up and running. Texas has executed the oldest person on death row. They executed him last week. I know, don't look at me like that. But Tennessee was set to execute their guy. And he was convicted of killing his estranged wife and her two teenage sons in 1989. And he was supposed to be executed on Thursday night as well. Halted at the last minute due to an oversight in preparation for lethal injection. An oversight in preparation for lethal injection? I'm not sure what that would be. But the Tennessee governor, Bill Lee, said, "I'm granting a temporary reprieve while we address Tennessee Department of Correction protocol. Further details will be released when they are available." But he had his last meal. I mean, he already had eaten his last meal. He ordered a double bacon cheeseburger, deep dish apple pie, and vanilla bean ice cream. So he was set. He was full and felt good. And then, you know what? We're not going to kill you tonight. Go back. Go on. Get out of here. So maybe he can, you know, at least the next time, he'll get another, you know, cheeseburger and a deep dish apple pie or vanilla bean ice cream, or order something else. Now, the guy in Texas who they killed, Carl Wayne Bunton, 78, who was now, the oldest guy in Texas, he killed a Houston police officer 32 years ago. They're not saying what his last meal was. Really cool. He had his spiritual advisor with him and was praying when they gave him the dose of the lethal dose of pentobarbital. And apparently, you know, he took a deep breath, coughed once, and then it was all over. I was looking at the... Now, this is just me. All right, I was just looking at what some of the convicts had for their last meal, because I'm kind of a fan of what you would eat for your last meal. I don't know what I would order, and it may change, you know, over time. You spend a bunch of years in prison, you know, things change a little bit. Now, some states don't give you you don't get to choose. You just, here's your final meal and move on. Some states, like Florida, the price tag is you can get what you want under $40. And it's got to be prepared locally. So you don't get to have anything shipped in from Hawaii. But some people, you know, I was looking at what some people asked for their final meal. One guy wanted to have an olive. Okay, great. You can have a single olive, no problem. And they found the pit from the olive in one of his suit pockets. So there was, you know, that whole thing. And some inmates wanted Reese's peanut butter cups, and one inmate, I'm not sure which one it was as I was reading the stories, wanted just a pile of dirt from a special place. Oh, yeah, sure, we'll get to that. No problem. Maybe that's when he was reminded he was a kid. I don't know. But anyway, the pandemic's over because the states are getting the executions up and running. And we know that Carolina, South Carolina, just added the firing squad. And the guy said that he wanted the firing squad to kill him. But I think they halted that now. I think they said, no, you know what? We're just going to put a stay on carrying out that firing squad execution. What? Okay. I mean, if he's on death row, I guess it has to matter how we kill him. Okay. Oh, and I see where Kraft Heinz Foods is now being sued, a class action lawsuit against Kraft Heinz Foods, accusing the company of false labeling and deceptive trade practices in relation to the company's Country Time lemonade mixes. Now, I will say I'm a fan. I like Country Time lemonade. I don't necessarily always have Country Time lemonade here at the house, but when it's made, I'm a fan. I'm not going to turn down a glass of cool Country Time lemonade. Well, according to this lawsuit, DeMarcus Rogers... Mr. DeMarcus Rogers claims that while Kraft Heinz says its 19-ounce canisters of powder lemonade mix makes 8 quarts of lemonade, no, it does not, my friends. He claims it only makes 6 quarts, and he followed the directions on the product's packaging. So these statements from Kraft Heinz, prominently displayed on the label, are untrue, misleading, and likely to deceive reasonable consumers such as plaintiff, because the canisters do not contain enough powder drink to mix to make 8 quarts of lemonade or pink lemonade using the mix line in the cap. We've talked about that before, right? I mean, if you buy a box of trash bags, and the box says you have 100 trash bags, you just assume there's 100 trash bags in it. You're hoping that, you know, the company is telling you the truth, but there may only be 90 or 95 or even 99. You know how many trash bags that adds up to over the years? I mean, I told you about the Frosted Flakes when I was stocking shelves at Winn-Dixie 100 years ago, right? I mean, I'd open up the box and there'd be a box of missing in the box. So if you have 10 cases on a pallet, and let's say 1 in 10 boxes on a pallet are short a box, in a year, that's an awful lot of boxes. That's free money to Kellogg's. Now, I'm not saying that happened. I just know that I witnessed, you know, boxes being opened and it being short the full amount of Frosted Flakes that were supposed to be in the box. And so when you buy the pink lemonade or the regular lemonade and it says, hey, makes 8 quarts and it only makes 6, I mean, how many people really pay attention to that? Well, thanks to Mr. DeMarcus Rogers, he paid attention to it. So it's a 27-page initial filing, and it claims that Kraft Heinz conduct violated the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. How many times have we talked about companies violating the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act and the Alabama Deceptive Trade Practices Act, as well as breaching the company's own express and implicit warranties? Now, I don't know how much money this guy's going to get or if it's actually true. I mean, maybe the guy, you know, they're going to show that the guy doesn't know how to measure. We'll see what happens. The suit asks for 3 times actual damages to Rogers and others who may have been impacted by the company's alleged deception, as well as other damages. I believe that all the pink lemonade that I've purchased in the past, I've been shorted as well. Kraft Heinz owes me some cash. There's no doubt about that. So now they claim that anybody who's been impacted by the company's alleged deception, as well as other damages, and the amounts to be determined by a jury and or a court. He's asking the court order Kraft Heinz to stop its unlawful practices and give up any ill-gotten profits from sales of the lemonade mixes at issue in the case. Now, according to this story, they tried to reach out to Kraft Heinz and were unsuccessful. They tried to reach out to Mr. Rogers too, and it was unsuccessful. So they're just telling a story of what Mr. Rogers is suing Kraft Heinz Foods for. And you know what? If it's a lot of money. That's a lot of money to Kraft Heinz, if true, right? If true, if you're mixing, if you're putting the amount of powder in that container that only makes 6 quarts, and you're claiming that it makes 8. Over the course of year or years time, I mean, that's a boatload of lemonade mix and it's a lot of money made. So, I mean, hopefully it's not true. Hopefully these claims are not true. But when you start rolling out the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, and this man lives in Alabama, so he's, you know, adding on the Alabama Deceptive Trade Practices Act, I'm sure every state has their own Deceptive Trade Practices Act with, you know, maybe some minor differences, but nobody can get around the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. Don't even try. Don't do it. A quick reminder that if you want to become a contestant on What's the Lie, be sure to email chewingthefat@theblaze.com. And thank you for the members from the Chewing the Fat fan club and anyone else that showed up for my Facebook Live on Saturday evening. I hung out for a little bit, talked, answered some questions from the Chewing the Fat fan club members. And I appreciate it. Had a lot of fun. We'll have to do it again, okay? Thank you for listening to Chewing the Fat. And don't forget, I don't want to catch any company. If you're listening to this right now and you're violating the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, fix it before you get caught.
Stream and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.